Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And lately, you probably noticed we've been talking about what does it mean to take a creative, ethical, intentional approach to AI. And that's why I actually reached out to a friend of mine who is a phenomenal expert on educational technology named Tony Vincent. I saw him years ago, probably 20 years ago, give a phenomenal keynote, and it was about ed tech. And then I saw him recently, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, give a keynote about AI. And what I love is how intentional he is, how focused he is, how much of it is that he just understands what teachers are going through and what they need in terms of educational technology. He's practical, he's a deep thinker, he's fun, he's highly engaging, and I'll just give a plug real quick, like he's a phenomenal person for professional development if you're ever interested. His formal bio I will share with you right now. Tony brings a spark of fun to everything he teaches. Back in 1998, he was already using technology to add novelty and joy to his fifth grade classroom, specializing in creativity. Tony is known for crafting lessons, presentations, and resources that are both imaginative and practical. These days, he wears many hats, including national speaker, district AI coordinator, ShapeGrams creator, and proud dad. You can find Tony and his teacher-friendly newsletter at learninginhand.com. He also, if you check the show notes or you go to the blog post page that goes with this, you will see his Facebook, Blue Sky, and newsletter link. He has great resources that he shares out on a regular basis. So without further ado, here's Tony Vincent. All right, we have with us here Tony Vincent. And I have known Tony for a long time from back in our Arizona days. And you have been, I would say, ahead of the curve when it comes to technology for years. And so I just want to start out with the question, like, how did you get into educational technology?
I have always been a big nerd. like my uncle gave me this hand-me-down computer when I was 9 with it saved like to cassette tape. And I would open up a magazine and type in the basic code that was in there and just to see what it would do. Unfortunately, I never kept that up. I don't really know much about coding, but I did love what technology could do. And then I've always just been fascinated with education. I love helping people learn. I love helping people make things and do things. So when I became a teacher, taught fifth grade, I just took advantage of any technology that was around. And as my daughter calls it, the 1900s, when I started teaching, back in the 1900s, it was 1998, I had a class website. And there were no class websites there. I hosted it off of the Mac G3 that was running in the corner of my classroom. And I even had the school district knock on my door one day. I said, are you running a web server in here? Yeah, I got a class website. Want to see it?
Wow.
Well, that's not really how we do things. Oh, well, tell me how. I'll So the class website, which then before there was like really Google, there was Yahoo and you could click. And so I started getting a lot of teachers just seeing what was happening in my classroom just by the nature of having one of the only class websites around. And then the school tried a pilot project where each of my students got a Palm Pilot. And this was in 2001 when laptops would have been too expensive. And I got to see the power of what students can do with technology in their hands. And I started a website called Learning in Hand, which I still have today, though it's not about Palm Pilots anymore. Right. If you dig deep enough, you can find Palm Pilot stuff. And then we started podcasting at my elementary school in 2005, and it served as a template for so many other school-based podcasts. And I just love taking advantage of whatever tools are out there to reach our students and to do things in better ways and fun ways, and just bring as much joy to learning as possible, because I get so much joy from making stuff.
So when you think about the long evolution of being in this, I mean, you've been in this space for a long time.
1900s.
I know, right? 1900s. What seems different about this moment in time when it comes to sort of this generative age and the advent of large language models? Like, what aspect of that feels similar and different to you compared to other iterations of technology?
Yeah, I think just the speed of adoption. You know, we back in Palm Pilot days or having class websites, like we had time, we had years where we could really develop what it looked like in a classroom and how it affected things. And, you know, just with AI, the pace is just so rapid. I think the other difference is a lot of the pushback, where there are very anti-AI people and ones that say it has no business being in a school at all, where previous technologies, I'm sure there was pushback, but not the kind that we see sometimes with AI.
Do you think, I mean, when you think about the pushback, do you think some of that is sort of coming from people feeling a little bit burned by the negative effects of smartphones and youth? Like, do you think some of it is this like backlash to what happened with that tech?
I think some of that, and then just the AI is a little bit different than the other technologies that we've had, and people have a variety of reasons why. I mean, environmental, intellectual, copyright issues. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. So I can see a point of view where it's like, maybe we should be skeptical of this, and we certainly should be, but it's a fact of life, and students need to know about it. We can't shield them from it because it's everywhere.
Yeah, I wonder too, like, I mean, when I've thought about it, we're shaped partly by, you know, cultural narratives, and most of the cultural narratives about AI have not been positive, right? I mean, it's been Blade Runner, Skynet, right? Like, it's been a lot of scary things in the 80s related to what will artificial intelligence look like. I mean, one of the things I think about is, like, one of the biggest dangers I see currently with generative AI is that it's too positive, right? That we focused on making AI into something that would be pro-social to avoid Blade Runner and Skynet and whatnot. And then it's too agreeable, right? Like it will tell people, great idea. And you're like, that's actually not a great idea. Please don't, you know? And so I think some of it that I see is, it comes down to technology is not developed in a vacuum, and it's not implemented in a vacuum. It's deeply social and cultural. And so I wonder how much of it just comes down to those stories that we grew up with, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's always, there's always somebody when you mention AI, like, oh, when it takes over the world, like, it's just an assumption. AI is going to take over the world, right? Because they've seen it
right
in so many different iterations in pop culture.
Yeah. Yeah. And then for me, it was, you know, the only positive example that I loved, because I'm a nerd too and grew up as a nerd, was Data on Star Trek, right? Like, that was the one positive, the only positive AI that I could think of. If you think about this idea, though, of this cultural moment, AI, generative AI comes out, it's moving faster than we had anticipated in a lot of respects, right? I want you to think about that reality and imagine that you're a fifth grade teacher all over again, right? And you're in the classroom, you're busy, it's chaotic. You want to ethically integrate technology, and that includes AI. What mindset do you take with something like AI, knowing that it's so complicated?
Well, I think one of the things, and we've been focused on, like, the four C's of, you know, future ready skills of critical thinking, creativity, communication, where I think those skills are still important. Teaching exactly how AI works today is fine, but really having that flexibility and having skills to be ready for anything and to be critical of anything, I think is the mindset to have. And I know you've done a lot of work in this, is to make sure that the AI isn't doing the important thinking for the student. So much learning is that productive struggle, and making sure that the students understand that the learning is work, and AI might be able to do some of that work for them. But if they want to be the learner, they've got to do a lot themselves.
What do you think? I want to get to the teacher side of AI, which is something you've done a lot with, especially early elementary. That was one of the reasons I wanted you on the podcast, is you're probably my favorite thinker in terms of how teachers can use AI ethically themselves as a tool. But I do want to talk for a moment about the student side, because although a lot of these tools are being rolled out slowly and it's more teacher focused, we are starting to see a lot more of the student focused AI usage. What are some examples that you could think of in terms of having students using AI in a way that still includes productive struggle, or that still includes deeper learning, right? So that the AI is not doing the thinking for you.
Yeah, and I think when it comes down to that, the teachers have to think about what learning standard are they focused on. You know, if you're focused on developing ideas, then it's the AI could do a lot of the grammar cleanup because you're not studying the grammar. But if you're studying grammar, then maybe the AI can help more with the ideas. So it's really being crystal clear and transparent with teachers with what the learning is, and then the students know what their brains are supposed to focus on.
Can you give me like an example of like what that might look like?
Yeah. Well, if you're, say, a fifth grade teacher with a writing assignment, and you're focused on topic sentences, you know, then the AI maybe can help come up with the topics, but you certainly don't want the AI doing the writing, because that'll take away the thinking piece. In fact, I've developed a little tool for the school district I work with called transparency.support. And it's just something I vibe coded, but I took all the different pieces that a teacher might have in an assignment, and the teacher can go through and checkmark exactly where AI can help.
Oh, wow.
And then it just makes a little, we call an AI help statement that the teacher can then paste into their assignment. So then the students know clearly, like, oh, it can help me draft, and it can help me revise, and it can help me with multimedia. And then that same tool can be used by the student, and then they can click which ways AI helped them. And then this little box to say, and I did thinking by this, and then they can copy that whole statement and paste it into their assignment as their AI help statement.
Interesting. You know, I'm so fascinated, because I always hear about, like, you know, the stoplight system or this or that, but one of the downsides of that is that it seems to treat assignments as being one large segment that's either, you know, no AI or AI with modification, or human with some AI modification. But what you're really describing is something that's breaking the larger assignment down into tasks and saying, like, let's look at where AI is ethical, acceptable, intentional here. That's really different.
Yeah, it's very granular, because looking at those stoplight things, it doesn't tell you a whole lot. It doesn't give the student the kind of direction that they need. So being very specific in where AI can help. And this, I had thought about this idea before, and then there was an extension called, it has a really cute name, AI, so I look it up to give them credit, but it was a Chrome extension, and okay. I needed a web page that did it. But then I'm like, well, if I'm making this web page myself, I can really put exactly what I think should be in there. Oh, it's called AI Trust You. Okay. Laguna Beach Unified School District came up with this extension, and it kind of works in a similar way of what I just described. And again, being very specific about this, so the teacher can be specific about how AI can go into the assignment, and then the students can report their use of AI in a very specific way.
One of the things I'm struck by is just that shift away from gotcha kind of policies, which I see with AI checkers, into a place that's just built on relationship, trust, transparency. That's such a different approach.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, to a lot of teachers who are listening and thinking, I just don't want my students using AI. I'm curious if you could speak to maybe the downside of taking that surveillance approach or that gotcha approach, or just saying, we're going to run everything my students do through an AI checker. What would you say to that teacher?
Yeah, the gotcha just isn't, those checkers aren't reliable. And there's so many times where you read accounts of students who, like, I really did not use any AI on here. And now I just failed this assignment because the checker said I did. And then if you look, it takes just a couple clicks. You can see these amazing videos that students are watching where they have access to AI checkers too. So if they really wanted to take the time, they can put their own work through the checker and then make changes and then submit it again until it gets a low percentage. So it's not foolproof at all. And I think that this is just such an opportunity to redesign some of the ways that we've had assignments in the past, and where the process now really is more important than the end product, is taking students through that, conferencing with them or grading pieces of their writing process at different checkpoints so that it's their work and you've kept tabs on their journey as they've gone through, is one way to do that. Another thing is that, as an adult living in the world, as an entrepreneur, I rely on AI for some, it helps me do a lot of things in better ways. And don't we want our students to be able to have that advantage too, and to know how and when to work with AI, and mm-hmm. how and when to not use AI is something that I think we got to learn in school. Mm-hmm. So sometimes some of the assignments could go backwards. Start with AI doing the assignment and then have the students take it apart and look at it and analyze it. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of opportunities to change some of the ways we do things for the better.
I've often thought about that aspect where, like the comparison I give is the drum machine, right? Like, drum machine was going to kill live drumming and it didn't, right? But what the drum machine ended up doing was creating entire genres of music that didn't exist before, right? Drum machine sampling, all of the above, right? And, you could look at, I don't know, auto-tune, and you could say, think what you want of T-Pain. He invented a sound of his own, right? And he has an amazing voice, right? Like, he actually is a great singer. You may or may not like electronic dance music, but it's a genre, right? Like, and it's, yeah. So one of the things I wonder about is, as students use AI creatively and they take that approach that, like, Ethan Mollick talks about the notion of cyborg tasks, right? Where you're really blending together the human and the machine back and forth in this, like, symbiotic process. I wonder what will emerge with our students in the future in terms of using AI creatively and differently to do things that we previously hadn't even imagined. And I think it's really easy right now to just think about cheating, or think about academic integrity, or think about, like, cognitive atrophy. And those are all very real concerns. But I wonder sometimes, like, what's going to happen? What new creative work is going to emerge from students learning how to be creative with the technology? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would say it's never been a better time to have ideas. because
yes.
I feel like if I have the time and I have the motivation, I could accomplish anything because I have AI as a partner that can help me. And there are just so many tools out there that if I really want to do something, I can figure it out and AI can help guide me.
So I want to zone in now for a second. Like, we've been talking about the student use, and this feels like just a normal, by the way, this feels like a conversation that you and I would be having anywhere, because like,
yeah,
all over the place, because this is just how I am. Hooray ADHD, right? But let's think about for a moment the teacher side. So one of the things that I am really struck by is how practical you've been in sharing specific ideas for teachers using it, especially at the elementary level. So I want to think about for a moment, if you are an early and upper elementary teacher, so kind of think about both zones. We're going to go early elementary first, because often we don't hear enough about how teachers can be implementing it at the younger grades. So imagine you've got a teacher, their first grade, second grade, right? What are some practical ways that they could be using AI themselves in terms of teaching, learning, productivity, any of those zones? And just share a couple of practical ideas, if you would.
Yeah, I think as a classroom teacher, you have ideas, and it's never been a better time to have ideas, right? So one of the easiest things to get started with is really like just a lesson hook. You have a lesson coming up, and you know, if it's Halloween, you're like, all right, how am I going to connect Halloween with simple machines? Well, if you thought long enough or Googled enough, you could find something, but asking a chatbot can jumpstart that process and give you some ideas that you can refine and be like, I've hooked my students because they're into Halloween and it goes directly with whatever I'm teaching. So AI is great at making connections. So sometimes I take two really different things just to see how AI can connect them. And it always finds a way. Yeah. So lesson hooks, or even then you think to the end of a lesson that you're doing, how it can help you write an exit ticket, questions that can help you with formative assessment. And then, you know, younger kids probably aren't typing something into a Google form, but if older kids are, they type something into the form, then the AI can help you identify places where there are some misconceptions in that. And or before the lesson even starts, you can ask, I'm about to teach first graders measurement with a ruler. What are some of their misconceptions they'll have, and how can I address those in my lesson? So how it about, just helps you prepare to teach.
Yeah. How about, you know, one of the things to think about is like one of the hardest things is a lot of teachers have, where I live at least, there's a lot of teachers that have sort of boxed curriculum. Like, it's given to them, reading instruction, math instruction, whatever. And then they're told, differentiate this. And that is time consuming. That is challenging. And like, I don't think people realize how fast a day goes by in an early elementary classroom and how little time there is to prep, to teach, to all of the above. So how do you see AI being helpful in terms of differentiation at the early elementary level?
Yeah, it's, again, one of those things where the teacher could take the time and research all this stuff and develop things that it would take a while, but AI can do it pretty much instantly. Of, you know, what the obvious one is, rewriting text so that it meets different levels. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it can also help you decide, like, you can tell it, I have a group of students who they've already mastered this on the pretest, or they already know all their letter sounds. What can I have them do while I work with the rest of the class, or what's the next natural step in this? And I always think of AI as like, I taught with one of the best teachers I've ever seen. And I could if I could just sit down and talk to her constantly, but she's not available, you know, if I'm lesson planning in the middle of the night or, you know, whenever. But, you know, one of the next best things is AI. It has all this knowledge, it has ideas, and really, as I, Gemini now has this, but ChatGPT has this memory, and I've turned it on. It knows me. It knows my approaches and how I like to teach. It's gotten to know me over the last couple of years. That we make a ChatGPT and I make a great team where we can brainstorm, we can work out problems, and it's a good sidekick.
How would you? I'm gonna toss out obviously designing resources, designing leveled readers, designing skill practice. I'm sometimes blown away by that. Yeah. You know, I have a former teacher or a former teacher candidate that I work with who's now a teacher, and she basically has differentiated homework, right? And so she's teaching third grade, and she just has a student profile that's designed and then generates handouts for them to do one homework assignment a week. It's like not too much, but then an answer key and an explanation for parental figures. And it's been a game changer. Like, it's been a huge aspect of like, oh, this is something that was not just saving me time, but actually leading to higher quality. Yeah. So I'm curious, like, what do you think are some examples of not just like, oh, we can use this to save time, but I can save time. Also, I can create something that in the past is not possible for me to do. Like, can you think of examples of that? And this could be at any grade level where you would say we can now do things that we didn't have time at all to be able to do in the past.
Yeah. Well, in elementary, there's a lot of like station rotation kind of things that happen. And that's a lot of prep to do one thing. So you don't do it. Right. And so with AI being able to generate quizzes around a video, and then different stations have different videos, and so you have that accountability piece that can be that quiz, or to make different slideshows based on, you know, student interests or their however you happen to have grouped them, just goes back again to that resource making that would you just wouldn't have time to have made something so specific. And that's what I love, is that the customization that AI can bring about. You know, if it's, you know, your class is into brain rot, you can bring that in, you know. But then next year, it's who knows what they'll be into next year, but you can bring, even if you don't know that much about it, you can still work with AI and figure out how to incorporate that and just, you know, catch the student's attention.
Brain rot, 6, 7. There's certain things that you're like, no, not that number. What would you do in terms of, you know, one of the things that I think about that can take a long time is just a productivity piece. What would you do if you were back in the classroom as a fifth grade teacher again? So I want you to imagine, and it's become expectation that every week you're doing a classroom newsletter, right? Now, on some level, you can have students write the newsletter. There's all kinds of great things, but where could you see something like a classroom newsletter? Like, how would you attack that right now as a teacher if you had access to AI?
Oh my, I love that idea, because I just had it. I religiously published a weekly newsletter, yeah, for parents, and I tried to put some student work in there and that, but it was mostly work for me. But so I just had this idea. What if working, you have a Google form perhaps where students fill out some of the things they think should be in the newsletter. Maybe they have some different quotes. Anyway, you get the right prompts in there. Uh-huh. And then you just give that whole spreadsheet that the form makes into AI and have it do an analysis of what students seem to think were important. Quote some of the specific students. And man, I think that could draft something really neat and not take up a lot of time.
That's fascinating. Yeah. And then you can customize it with your own style, with your own humor, with a couple references of something that you saw a student do. Like, you could, yeah, still personalize it, but it's saving time, and it And it really is coming from, that's fascinating. That is not the direction I would have taken it in, but that is really interesting because you're bringing in, we always talk about student voice, but that's literally pulling from the student voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for asking that question. Cause it's that is pretty fascinating. You know, one of the things I did even back in the 1900s, when I started teaching fifth grade, is I wrote a weekly rhyming poem to put in this newsletter.
Yeah.
And then I'd work on it on the weekend, and then on Monday, I'd be like, all right, I worked on this poem, guys, to review last week. Let's hear it. Sometimes it would take an hour to write this thing, but the deal was I was a security guard on the weekends, and I had nothing better to do than to write poetry about my classroom. So once I did not have that security guard job anymore, I stopped writing the poetry. But I mean, that could even be part, I could feed into AI, obviously can write a poem that rhymes pretty fast, but maybe it could even take, with that student input, that workflow we just talked about, part of that could be, okay, now write a poem that summarizes what we did in science last week. Or that.
That's really interesting. Final question, as we think about this idea of AI, you know, some people that listen to this podcast are deep dive experts, right? And then some people are still in a place where they're going like, I know it exists, but it's overwhelming. It's been so much. So I want you to speak for a moment to just someone who feels like they're at the novice level. And I say this because if anyone's listening, I saw Tony give a keynote where he made AI so approachable for teachers, especially not forgetting about the elementary teachers, which often happens. So when you think about that teacher who goes, I'm overwhelmed by it. The change is happening so fast. I feel like I can't keep up, but I should take the time to do something. I should get to know it a little bit. What are some first steps that you would recommend to a teacher who feels at that like overwhelmed but curious stage?
Yeah, I think you need to maybe spend some time learning about it. And luckily now there are more and more resources that are simple and geared toward teachers. Google comes to mind. They have some online resources and videos that are made for teachers so that they can kind of get a handle on just the basics of AI. Or even find a video that's aimed at kids about AI and watch it yourself, because that will help you understand it in a more basic way.
Yeah. Yeah. What would be a good like classroom use that you would recommend for a teacher that says, all right, so I can get to know that on the side. I want to try something. What would be a good first step? I want to try this next week in my classroom, blank.
I think it goes back to writing poetry, actually. And that is, you know, at the end of a lesson, just call up the chat bot on the screen and say, all right, what are some of the things we learned? Or at the end of a unit, end of something. So it's a review, it's a reflection, and you can type in, all right, these are all the things we've been learning. And now it doesn't have to be a poem. It could take any kind of form, but based on what the AI has learned, it can put that into a rhyming poem, or it can turn it into a movie trailer script.
Yeah.
Or a rap battle. Like it can take that content and kind of repackage it. And it's fun for students to see that happen instantly. Yeah. But then also it's not going to get everything right. It's going to have, especially with rhyming, like it really contrives some of the rhymes. So you can talk about what could make it better? How can we change it? Or how can we ask the AI to change it to make it better?
I love that. One of the things I've done with my pre-service teachers as a warm-up activity is convert pop songs into the style of Shakespeare. And I'm telling you, like, it does a great job until it doesn't. And so just taking it, right, and then modifying it slightly, and then making it a warm-up game that we do on class on Tuesday night. Like it's one of like a dozen different fun like warm-ups. And yeah, again, if you told me to take Scrubs and turn it into the style of Shakespeare, it's been hours. like it would not work. But it totally works. Like I was like, this is actually fantastic at mimicking Shakespearean style. And I thought, if I was a high school English teacher, I would 100% do this as a warm up and make it a game and save a bunch of time. And so I think, like, you're right, having it make poetry or do something in the style of Shakespeare or make a movie trailer, those are all like fantastic things that don't have to be heavy lifting, don't have to be, oh my gosh, my kids are going to cheat. Like, this is all in the manageable box of I'm playing around with it.
Yeah. And I always think to reassure teachers who are new to this is that AI chatbot like Gemini or ChatGPT, there's nothing special you have to know to use it. You right. just talk to it in natural language. Mm-hmm. So that goes back to, it's never been a better time to have ideas, because if you can communicate your idea, then the AI will understand it and, you know, may or may not give you the output you want, but you don't have to write in code or put things in quotation marks or have anything. You just communicate like you would to a person.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing your ideas. I'm really just thinking about that transparency process that you shared at the very beginning. It's going to be like percolating all week long for me. So thank you so much for sharing your insights and your ideas. And real quickly, where are some places that people can follow you?
Well, the best place is, I've had this website since the early 2000s. Maybe does it go back to no, it does not go back to the 1900s, but close. Learninginhand.com. Really, most of my efforts online nowadays are to my email newsletter. So if you go to learninginhand.com, there's that big newsletter button. I put things in there about AI, but just good teaching and learning, tech, all stuff I think is pretty fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
All right, so that is Tony Vincent. Again, please be sure to follow him if you haven't done that already. And if you enjoy this podcast, would you do me a favor and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or, I don't know, wherever it is that you're getting this podcast and listening to it on a device? Also, tell a friend, a colleague about it. Subscribe if you have not done that yet. And please check out my newsletter. Go to spencereducation.com. It's at the very bottom. You'll see a little thing about the newsletters. You can join the 90,000 plus people who get all my latest information, resources, everything that I share straight into your inbox. So yeah, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.